Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens.
My name is Kathleen McGowan. And today we are going to be talking about a subject that is incredibly dear to my heart. And that subject is astrology. There's been a lot of talk about astrology lately. It's back in the news again. Much more than just looking up your daily horoscope. Astrology is one of the most ancient and revered sciences and practices in the world. I personally have been studying astrology since I was a child. And we are going to be talking today with a very good friend of mine who is one of the most talented and I just think clear, popular astrologers. My friend Carolyn Reynolds is with us today. Welcome, Carolyn.
Hello. It's good to be with you again.
Great to be here. Carolyn is the author of a number of popular astrology books. Carolyn, what I love about your work and some of the things we're going to be talking about today is that you write about astrology with such clarity and you write about it with humor. You know, you're clear, you're funny, but there's so much wisdom in what you write. And astrology can be very complicated. And on the other hand, I think where it gets a lot of criticism in terms of science is that it can also be treated in a way that's very frivolous. Like, for example, we were in a bookstore the other day, and I picked up a book, an astrology book that was kind of an astrology book for lovers. It was a Valentine's Day book, and I skimmed through it, and it was, it was just lightweight. It was so surface. It was written for the sort of women's magazine crowd, and there's nothing wrong with that. It was fun, but there was no real depth to it. And I think that our challenge as astrologers in the 21st century is to let people know that there is so much real depth and wisdom and human understanding that can come from astrology. And so my first question for you, before we get into some of the more in-depth issues and even your journey, is an overall question, and that's this. Now in the 21st century, why is astrology more important than ever, do you think?
Well, there's so many reasons. First of all, with the misunderstanding through the media, with the daily forecast, we need to update our knowledge a little bit, that that's just based on the sun sign, and there's so many other elements to your chart, like the angles and the degrees and so forth. If we catch up to that, instead of reading the simplistic publications and educate ourselves a little, it can guide us not only through daily activities and the best time to sign contracts or not to sign them, for example. It can guide us in a spiritual path as well, because every chart contains the potential for how we can develop spiritually. So it's important to know that, especially at this time, because we could all put our conscious thought together to creating a better world. So astrology is more important than ever.
I know that, when I look at the big criticisms that skeptics have about astrology, that's always the first one. Number one is always, how can 1/12 of the world's population all be having the same kind of day? And as you know, that's a complete
mistake. That's not happening.
Yeah.
That's right.
That is not what's happening.
The answer is it can't, because it doesn't happen that way. That's the complete misinterpretation of astrology. That's like 1/1,000th of a chart. You know, that is like the last thing, and you know this from me, from the comment about Steven Tyler being so Cancerian versus Aries. Even though he's an Aries, I have a tendency to see people as their composite in the chart. And there are so many other factors besides the sun sign that are important that you can't possibly distill it down to 1/12 of anything.
And I want to back up for a minute. I want to tell that story, because Carolyn and I were having a discussion about a week or so ago about astrology, because we are working on a book together about compassionate astrology and how to understand men through the sun signs. And we were talking about Steven Tyler as an archetypal Aries man after watching him recently on American Idol. And Carolyn said to me, well, you know, he's not a typical Aries man, because when I watch the way that he comments, and especially the way he talks about women, there's something so Cancerian. He has these Cancer elements to his personality. And I was able to obtain a copy of Steven Tyler's chart, and sure enough, Steven Tyler has Cancer in a very, very powerful, important place in his chart. So you were right on without knowing that and without ever having looked at something. And the moral of this story is that astrology is so precise. It's about where every single planet is in relation to each other and to you at the moment that you first draw breath. So there are hundreds of elements and components to an individual astrological chart, and that's what most people don't realize. That said, there is an important archetypal alignment to the sun sign. So even though we want to say you can't generalize, I also want to say there is something extremely powerful about understanding sun sign and sun sign personalities. Don't you agree?
Yes. It's the starting point, I would say, to understanding the person. It's the quick, direct line. And then, as you know from my book of lovers, the second thing, I think, is the moon, because that's our emotional needs. So you see our personality, our basic character in the sun sign, and then the emotional needs. Now, when you want to get into all the other things, the predictive elements and the other nuances of the personality, then you can look at the rest of the chart and the aspects and the geometry of the skies at the moment they were born.
And that is another thing that you did really, really well in your book, The Book of Lovers. The Book of Lovers is a relationship-related book that talks about the relationship between the sun and the moon, both in your own chart and then also in the charts of the people that you might be involved with. And so it talks about those combinations of personality and emotional needs. And it's a great book for people who love astrology and want to take it a little bit into the next level. They want to move beyond the sun sign because there's so much educational information in there about how the moon becomes a huge factor, and it's a nice little layering piece for people who are really just beginning to learn astrology, because they start to see how much more there is to each individual element and each planet.
Right. Yes, it is. It's a good place to start because it's captivating too. You see, by that one extra layer, you go, gosh, I'm really getting the sense of this person, and I really understand how this attracts this, you know, the sun-moon attraction. A really interesting one going on right now is Prince William and Kate Middleton. She is a Capricorn with her moon in Cancer, and he is a double Cancer, so he has the sun and the moon in Cancer. What they have is a sun-moon opposition, and I don't want to get technical, but they also have not only the sun and the moon in opposite signs, but in the same signs. I mean, talk about destiny. And the thing of it is, they were always bumping into each other, and they were friends, and yeah, they went running together. And this developed over time because it was fate, you know? And so many times you can see that fate at work with the moon. And I didn't come up with this theory, although a lot of astrologers weren't interested in it in the beginning. And I had a couple of critical comments saying that, don't I know about Venus and how important it is in love relationships? But the thing of it is Dr. Carl Jung started the study of married people and found out that the rate of marriage astrologically being connected to the sun and the moon was three times higher than the great than the instance of coincidence. So it was more scientifically based. And, of course, Jung, he just took everything to another level. And he really introduced astrology in many ways to a more scientific community. But if you watch Prince William and Kate Middleton, it's a fascinating story of astrology, for me anyway.
Yeah, I'll have to look at those charts. And wasn't Princess Diana was a Cancer as well, wasn't she?
Yes, she had Cancer. She was Cancer Aquarius. So, you know, there's always that family connection as well. You can go down family trees and see suns and moons connecting there. If you see someone who's a fixed sign, let's say they're Scorpio, and everybody else in their family are air signs, you think, ooh, something's wrong here. You know, this one person isn't going to get along. How did they get in that family even? it's pretty unusual. But when that happens, there's usually a lot more conflict than in the average family.
So tying it slightly back, but kind of like, you know, I'm an outsider to astrology in the sense that I fervently believe that astrology works, but I'm also one of those people who has no idea how to draw charts. And mm-hmm. going even one step further back, I'm kind of like always, when you look into the 2012 phenomenon, you will see that people write the most ridiculous things, specifically astronomers, and they do the same thing when it comes to astrology. Where do we start from this? Like, when we are born, do the planets embed us with this energy, or are the planets just there as a kind of cosmic clock, or a cosmic computer, which actually tells us what the cosmos or the universe as a whole has given us at this specific moment in time, i.e. birth?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I see it as a force, something, some unseen force that we feel, like the solar flares, but we feel it from different energies in the universe. And the energies, they don't, in the sense of a clock, they don't predict necessarily minute by minute, but in cycles. The clock goes around every, 24 hours. And I think it's the cycles of astrology that is the most important tool for individuals. When they break it down day by day and try to go by it, it's too complex to simplify. In other words, if you're trying to do your chart, there's five different influences for that day. You know, Mercury's retrograde telling you not to sign papers. Jupiter's over here saying, oh, it's so expansive, do anything you want. And that's where the art of astrology becomes almost intuitive after seeing so many charts and so many potential situations. So it is like a clock in a lot of respects, but it's not the minute-by-minute ticking away. I hope that's...
No, it's great. You know, Carolyn, one of my heroes is the Bulgarian philosopher who lived in the 20th century, Ivanov. And Ivanov wrote a lot about astrology and the esoteric sciences. And one of the things he says that I've always thought was so beautiful, and I wanted to know if you agreed with this. And what Ivanov says is this. He likens the infant human spirit to soft wax. And he says when that spirit is born, the imprint of where the stars are in relationship to each other and to that infant, it's imprinted into that soft wax. And then that wax hardens and becomes permanent. That chart, that influence of the cosmos at that moment of first drawing breath is imprinted into that infant's soul and becomes their chart, the chart for their destiny in their lives. And I've always thought that was an extremely beautiful way to look at
it.
Now, to that regard, one of the things, the questions I'm asked a lot, and I want to hear your response to it, is, well, then, does that mean astrology is definite, i.e. this is your chart, this is what's going to happen to you, the stars, in fact, do compel, and where does the influence of free will come into how we work with our charts?
That's also an interesting question and kind of two answers. First of all, there's grace. Say you have a terrible chart and you've done terrible things and your karma this time coming in is just more than you can bear. I think there's grace because I believe in God or a universal being or whatever you want to say. That supersedes other things. So you might, so to speak, beg to get off your wheel, get out of that clock to some degree, have some period of gentleness through that. Another thing is that the incredibly Renaissance man, Dane Rudyard, I don't know if you've ever read his, an astrological mandala. He uses degrees like I do, but in a different way. He has a symbolic meaning for them, and I have a literal meaning. And in there he says that the cycles don't happen to us, we happen to them, and it's sort of in a working relationship way. It flows back and forth so that the cycles may be there. We're not ready to connect yet, whether it's a spiritual situation or something else, but it's inclining us toward that. An example of that was that when he did Elvis Presley's chart, Elvis wanted to know kind of basically if he had to marry Priscilla because he didn't want to get married. And Rudyard did say when he thought he would marry her, and that he was going to marry her. He didn't have to marry her, but the event would keep occurring until he did marry her because there was a karmic reason for it. And so if you look at it that way, I always think like there's times that the aspects knock at the door or something and it says, you know, you need to pay attention to this. Then they come in stronger. You need to start acting on it, like with the opposition. You got to start working on this. You can't ignore it anymore. And then as things come to different cycles, whether it's a Saturn return or whatever, you have to take action. And at that point, that is a speck of diminished free will because you've had plenty of time to work it out on your own. Is that too complicated or?
No, I think it's a great explanation. It's because it's your chart presenting you with opportunity. Sometimes those opportunities are challenges because those challenges are what we have to overcome in order to learn the lessons that we're here to learn. So that's what the chart gives you. And that's what I always tell people. Your chart gives you all kinds of opportunities. You need to look at it that way. And those opportunities are all opportunities for growth. And once you overcome them, you can then move forward. And I love how you refer to that as grace. I think that's really beautiful. And so I want to back up now and say, how did you first come to all this? At what point in your life did you first discover astrology? And when did you say, aha, this is it. I get this. I know what this is. And I know that I'm a part of this. Because I find that astrology is not a profession. It is a calling. I have never known an astrologer who did not have that aha moment when all of a sudden they just took one look at all these squiggles on the page and absolutely understood what they were and understood that they had a destiny to participate in this extraordinary science. So when did that happen with you?
Well, I remember exactly. I had been ill and I couldn't work. I'd had some surgeries. So in December of 1969, I started a publication called The Bargain Bulletin that went from like Murrieta to Escondido to all the way to San Diego, and it was like a shopper. And because my beginning issue is something I could do from my home and basically from bed for a few months. So I needed to fill some space the first few issues. Naturally, people didn't know about it. And so I decided to put an astrology column in there based on what little information I knew at the time. And I was in a restaurant, and I heard some people reading it, and I was, like, so freaked. They were planning their week according to what I said, and yet I didn't know that much at the time. You understand? And so I started taking classes. I studied. I was lucky enough to, a couple of years later, get to work with some American Federation astrologers who were in Las Vegas, and they had a school there, and they brought in all these really great astrologers, from across the country. And it was the most wonderful school and learning experience. And then from there, I hooked up with associations like American Federation and so forth in the beginning, and I studied with them. Like every 2 years, we'd get together for 4 or 5 days to study, and I really became immersed in it, and it was a calling. I do believe that. But I had an awakening in January of 1970 then when I realized right after that first December issue came out, oh my God, you know, people are counting on this, and I only know this much. So I started to really study, and I had great teachers.
And it's interesting, the timing, and of course not an accident, and I'm sure that you've probably already looked at what the stars were doing at the end of 1969 and the beginning of 1970, because at the same time that you are having this awakening and you are working on your astrology, Linda Goodman on the other side of the country is also having an awakening and is writing Sun Signs.
Exactly. And I can tell you that I used to have a book, and I hope I still have it, where she was sponsored her sun signs book by a bank in California. It had a banner. If you open your account, you get this book.
Really?
And I couldn't believe it, because I just, you know, it was so accepted by a bank.
By a bank.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have taken a number of steps backwards, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Well, that happens. That's cyclic, too, you know. And I think that this step forward this time, and especially now with, like, the news service, that we're out there answering these ridiculous questions by people who really don't know anything about astrology but feel totally comfortable saying that they know everything about it, and, in fact, astrologers don't know much at all. So we sort of have to get out there in the media and get over this idea of us and get down to the reality of what it is we do. And we astrologers take it pretty seriously. I mean, I feel very blessed to have certifications, because they're not easy to come by, and that math is hard to do, as you know. But it's not that math isn't even necessary anymore. But yes, Linda was such a great pioneer for us all, and it was happening at the same time.
Well, you know, I want to go back to the fact that that math is really hard to do, because when I first started doing astrology, as you did, I'm sure, everything was done longhand. We had did everything. You know, we had calculators,
yes.
and it's extremely complicated. You know, now it's easy. You know, plug it into a computer, it does all the work for you.
Yes.
And I think more is the pity. I think everyone who studies astrology should learn how to cast a chart by hand, just so they can see how extraordinarily mathematical and complex it is to figure out those calculations. Because it's not just a matter of saying, oh, I was born on March 22nd, I'm an Aries. There's an awful lot more to it.
May, for example, be an eclipse right before or after your birth, which is a whole other set of circumstances outside the ordinary. If you have an eclipse, or if you're that one in every so many thousands of people who have a thing called a yod, which is a particular geometric kind of design within your chart. And if you have a yod, you're destined for something special. You know, you're going to do something with your life. I mean, there are all these other indicators that people don't even consider, even with the computer. So it's certainly a really important step forward. That math thing needed to go. You and I both know. Working on my bank statement.
Yeah. Well, it gave us a lot more time and opportunity to work on the interpretive and the intuitive side of astrology when we stopped having to look at the numbers ourselves. But I was really proud of our community and of the astrological community worldwide over the last couple of months. You've got these really brilliant people like Diana Rosenberg, who's writing about fixed stars and who came out in defense of astrology. Because, as you know, every couple of years, and this is cyclical, there is some new scientific attack on astrology. And one of the things I've never entirely understood is why science is so intimidated by it. There seems to be this need for scientists periodically to come out and lash out against astrology. There seems to be almost a fear of it. You know, they're so dying to make astrology appear to be the work of charlatans and people who don't really understand astronomy. When, you know, in a lot of cases, when you look at the work of some of these astrologers online, you see how incredibly well-versed they are and how pioneering they are in the understanding of astrology. So, for example, the big event over the last couple of months that everyone's talking about is, oh my gosh, there's really 13 signs. And all of a sudden the media picks it up and runs with it and says, oh, look, astrology's been wrong and it doesn't really work because you're not really that sign, because they've just discovered this. And you and I and everyone else who's been in this astrology world for a long time laughs and says, oh, are we doing this again? Because this is not new information.
Exactly.
So
we've known it forever.
Right. So, you know, let's talk about this.
Babylonians knew it, you know?
Right. The Babylonians knew about the serpent handler. Let's talk about the serpent handler effect, the 13th sign. We call it the serpent handler because no one can actually pronounce Ophiuchus, or as you call him, the big oops, which I love.
Yeah, the big oops.
But basically, you know, it's all been in the news that you know, oh, astrologers haven't, you know, taken into account the wobble and the tilt, and we don't understand mm-hmm. the precession of the equinoxes, when in fact it was astrologers who discovered the precession of the equinoxes. And it's really, in fact, scientists who don't understand the way that Western astrology is set up.
That's exactly true.
So yeah. talk to me about this. What would you say to all these people who come on my Facebook and say, what does this mean now, this whole idea of there being a 13th sign, and I don't understand. Well, it is complicated at first. How do you simplify it? Because you are the queen of being able to take these complex ideas and make them really palatable and understandable for the average person.
Okay, well, I called several of my credentialing resources to say, you know, is there an official position or something? And the statements were so lame for a lot of them, like, oh, this happens every few years, end of story. Well, my first call came from a young actor in Hollywood worried about his tattoo like others. But I made it real simple for him because he's real sincere and he does get it. And I told him that rather each astrologer really gets down to the nitty-gritty of where this came from and what is behind everything they studied or not, it doesn't matter. The fact of it is, we work with a 360-degree circle. So we're the zodiac 360 degrees, and out there somewhere is maybe another 80 or 100 constellations, which we don't deal with, and none of them get to be assigned because they're not within that circle, which was discovered or utilized by the Babylonians. And the Egyptians went by the degrees within that circle, and the degrees are really critical to determining the outcome of a chart as kind of a whole. If you had to put it down to one sentence or something, you could do it with the degrees. And in fact, that's what I did for Unsolved Mysteries. So I tell everyone, we're still working with the same degrees and the same circle. Now, this one constellation happens to periodically, depending on the season, have as much as a foot or a portion of a foot in the elliptic, the circle, the 12 signs. And just because that little almost Sagittarian foot sticks in there doesn't mean that you have a sign of the foot or that you even want to be, you know. But it's really not significant. It doesn't matter. We know about it. We've always known about it. But this is the way astrology began, with the 360 degrees. And that thing up there doesn't count in that.
Yes,
portion of a thing.
So if you're born at the end of November, you are not the sign of the foot of the serpent.
No, no, and you do not even want to be. I mean, who wants to be the foot of the serpent or whatever? No, it just it's an interesting thing to me that I like to call it Oots, not only because it's hard to pronounce, but that particular time of the year is kind of known for making mistakes, misspeaking, and so I like to say foot in the mouth, you know. But it's really, we've known about it forever. And in fact, I think this is the most interesting thing about it. When the astrologers did come out with a statement from International Society of Astrological Research, ISAR, they came out with a great statement. And when they did, the guy who'd been talking about this suddenly stopped interviewing because they said in right there in bold letters, you were too lazy to research the difference between the zodiac and the constellations. And if you had, you wouldn't have said that. And he quit giving interviews.
Well, and that's absolutely true. And that's the piece of it that I think is ironic and also quite funny, that mm-hmm. it is usually men like this, the scientists who come at astrology and say, oh, here's all the reasons that you're wrong, have done a fraction of the research that real astrologers are doing. Mm-hmm. And once you throw it back at them and say, no, actually, here's all the reasons that we're right, yeah. it does tend to silence them. You know, I had,
and you know
just, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go
no
ahead,
I was just going to say academics and scientists are great, but, you know, you never hear for all their study and all their expertise, you never hear them explain that here comes a child genius that knows as much as you do at the age of 5, or a child composer who, you know, is playing piano and composing also by the age of five, compared to someone who's gone to all the finest schools and classical studies that you can. So I think it's important they dismiss that as well. And that's a mystery that probably is better solved by a person's chart than science, because they don't even address that.
Well, and one of the things that science says continually in their criticism of astrology is that there's no proof and there's no empirical evidence and there's no hard facts that any of this works and that it's all mumbo jumbo, to which I reply, as many, many wiser astrologers ahead of me have replied, we have thousands of years of evidence because we have watched it work for thousands of years. And that, to me, is more important than anything that can be quantified via numbers. And, by the way, a lot of it can be quantified because, going back to the way that charts are calculated, it is actually based on mathematical formulas, relationships, geometry, all of those things. It's an extremely elaborate and complicated science. Just one more thing on the serpent handler effect I wanted to say. You know, when this came out, I was thinking, I can't believe we're doing this again. And it went on everything. It was on the Today Show. It was on the Daily Show. It was on the news. It was everywhere. It was on the front page of AOL. And I was reading a great article in one of the astrology blogs, and it was one of the astrologers who said, look, you know, when this came out, I contacted all of the television stations to give them a rebuttal, to say all of the reasons why it was wrong, and they didn't want to hear it. They're like, oh, we've wrapped that story. That story's over. They don't want to hear the other side. They only wanted to hear the little controversial piece of the scientist saying, look, astrology is wrong. And they didn't give air to the other side. And I think that that's so unfortunate. And that's why we need to be talking about it. Like you said earlier, we need to be out there and we need to be having these conversations.
Yes, and it's a great time for the news service, you know, because people can go to that. Every time something like this comes up now, you can go to the Astrological News Service and you can pull up the answer for that, because we're going to be on it from now on.
And the Astrological News Service is a great source. In fact, on my Facebook for our listeners who are – and we'll also put this up and we'll put up links to the Spirit Revolution. I had an article that I posted from the Astrological News Service about that. And one of the reasons I posted it is because it has a lovely little – picture of the constellations, and it shows you exactly what you are talking about. It shows you Scorpio and Sagittarius, and then it shows you the picture of the serpent handler constellation and how it actually sits over Scorpio and outside outside of the elliptic of the constellations that we use in astrology. And so I think it's a really good example. It's like, okay, here it is. It's not really in there. You know, this is how you can see how it's outside of it. And I just, one more thing on this subject that I wanted to say is that it was, at least 20 years ago, maybe more, that I had an astrology teacher who gave me a lesson in the Ophiuchus effect. And her point of view was that people born at the end of November, between a specific period of dates, she always calculated in something called the Ophiuchus effect, which was not an extra sign, but just saying, look, people born within this sort of cusp period between Scorpio and Sagittarius do tend to have certain characteristics. And they are the characteristics that you discussed. And the funny thing is, she was born during that period, and she was always fond of saying that, you know, she was a centaur, so she was always shooting arrows, or she was a horse's ass. And because there is an element of people born in that signs, they're extremely outspoken, and they tend to take very, very big risks.
Right.
And that was what she referred to as the Ophiuchus effect. And again, that was 20 to 25 years ago, before this, quote, great discovery that we've all been talking about in the news for the last couple of months.
And it could be just back to the Egyptians, that they didn't bother to speak that minuscule influence, but they did consider it in the degrees between that November and December 13th date.
Well,
that's a possibility.
You've done extremely interesting and detailed work on this idea of degrees. And for those who don't have any understanding of astrology or are coming to it new, you know, essentially every sign has 30 degrees. But what I want you to talk about that, because it's what you did is extraordinary. And what you did with Unsolved Mysteries based on astrology was a fascinating study. And I was hoping you could tell that story.
They gave me, I believe it was 21 charts, and they were all kinds of mixes of people, and they said, could I identify the serial killers? They also gave them to probably 15 or 20 other astrologers. And, you know, I have that great faith in humanity. Some of the astrologers, maybe three or four, refused to do the assignment because they said they would be set up by the media to look foolish, that they would take sound bites and use them in a different way, and that has happened. But I went ahead and decided, you know, I was going to do this. I didn't want to because of the subject matter. I'm not interested in serial killers. I didn't know one from the other. I didn't even know the names of them at the time. But I looked through the charts, and I was right about all except one. And Unsolved said to me, my gosh, we better keep our eye out on that person. You know? But there is a degree of the 360 that shows up frequently, and I have kept in touch with serial killers now, as I'm not in touch with them personally, but, you know, in the news, and I look up their birth date, and that appears. And I'll tell you an interesting story about that. You know, I got them all right, and okay, everybody was amazed, and even the other astrologer said to me, how did you do it? And I told them, and they said, oh, you really did your homework, because we didn't even look at the degrees. I look at the degrees instantly, because I think it's so important, especially when you're looking at, like, an infant or something. But anyway, at the last of the Unsolved program, they had the all the television advertising going out because it was Sweeps Week, and we took it, by the way. So they had a lot of publicity going out about this, and they showed a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer in it. Well, he wasn't in that group of charts, and I didn't know what was going on. They just said that Entertainment Tonight or something like that might call, and not to say anything until there was an advertising glitch until, you know, they had gotten back with me. So I was on my way to dinner, and they sent me this fax. If I would have made this up, no one could have done a better job. There was Jeffrey Dahmer's chart with the not only exact degree, but in the right location where he would have hid the bodies. And so, you know, I looked at it, and I said, I'm not doing this. It was April Fool's. It was April the 1st. I said, I'm not doing this because this is some kind of joke. I had become friends with them. But I still didn't trust that, you know, it's the media, so to speak. And anyway, I finally said, yes, he's a serial killer, and this is what he's doing with the bodies. Well, they had the time reversed, and instead of putting them out there where everybody could see him, he was keeping them in the fourth house, not the tenth. As you know, Katie, the fourth house is your home. So he's keeping them right there in the fridge. So that was just a really amazing chart to look at. That all it did was solidify what I had done with the other charts. And we were all thankfully surprised that, you know, it didn't jeopardize the program because, you know, you can't advertise him in there and then he's not even in the grouping.
Well, and it just goes back to this. Astrology works. When you get into the details of it, astrology is extraordinarily accurate, and that you were able to look at it and look at these degrees, which is something that a lot of astrologers don't do. And your work on it is extraordinary. And I really hope you're going to write a book about degrees in astrology one day, Carolyn.
Yes, I have about a third of it ready for us to go. And I also have a copy of a book, Katie, that you would just love. It was mimeographed from somebody's notes, down the line, 500 years ago.
Wow.
And it talks, it's so awesome. And it does talk about degrees and some other things in the, you know, the kind of the finishing touches of a chart. So we will get on that. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it's very exciting. Well, you and I met through the unfortunate death of one of my heroes and mentors, the late Linda Goodman. And I wanted to talk about that for a minute because it was an amazing piece of destiny that brought us together. After Linda Goodman passed away, she had a significant amount of work that needed to be completed. And my understanding is that you were the first person who was actually called in to work on Linda's material. And that resulted in the book, Linda Goodman's Relationship Signs. Is that correct?
the first person. I think I might have been the second person. I mean, there's a little mystery surrounding that. But I was recommended by Linda Goodman's editor, Phil DeFranco, for Star Signs. And he had met me over lunch a couple of years before that. Someone set up a lunch so that we would get to know each other. And he knew Linda's work really well. He loved the Book of Lovers and had given it to Linda as well. And she liked that the style was similar in that it was conversational, but it wasn't imitation of any of her work. She was really kind of almost paranoid, and I don't blame her about that. So that's how the book that I had written got into the hands of someone who knew Linda, and there was some sort of a click that this person gets it in this more conversational tone of Linda Goodman, and so that I was contacted by someone who claimed to have the rights for Linda's work.
As was I. How was your experience working with Linda's material? And I do want to say that as well, that you really are the heir to Linda's style and her legacy, in that you do make astrology so approachable and understandable, and you're able to take the complexities of it and make it conversational, and that is the beauty of your work. And again, not an imitation of Linda's. You are your own astrologer. You've got your own style. As much as we all revere Linda, I think that you are actually you are a much more in-depth trained astrologer. So when you were presented with all this work on relationship signs, what was it like? What was it like for you to work on Linda's material? And overall, how do you feel about Linda's legacy? This is a woman who sold 100 million copies of astrology books. So I just wanted to hear what you had to say about that ultimate experience with Linda.
You know, I just love Linda. And I remember looking even on the back of her book covers and saying, she's so beautiful too, you know. That she could write that and break it down so perfectly. And I studied her work. And when I was handed the project, we had had a couple of interviews with this person, and she decided that, you know, we were all at dinner, that she would take me upstairs to where they were staying and show me the material. And she picked it up from a box and spread it out across the bed. And so I was actually on my knees looking at the material rather than sitting down or something. And I just, that moment I remember, because I thought it was really appropriate, because I revered her talent and what she had done. You know, it was just thrilling, and I was just touched at that moment. And I felt that Linda was guiding the book, that as it turned to be, from a series of reports that she had written but not finalized. And that was the other problem with the book, that some of her material hadn't been finalized, and they needed someone who could understand what she would be saying about another aspect. And, of course, at the end, as you know, there was a lot of controversy about it. And what I thought was so funny, that people picked one section of the book to rant and rave about how Linda had always written in this style and how could the others happen, when in fact I had written that rising sign or ascendant section years before, having nothing to do with that project, and we threw it in there. So I kind of laugh about that. The very people who were saying something's not right about this book, and something wasn't right about the book, but it wasn't that. They looked at the very piece that, you know, was my own and claimed it for Linda's. So we were a good mix, and I met wonderful people like you from the project. And they're friends for years now. You know, I've met a wonderful new circle of friends, and I feel completely blessed by them. And they're all people who knew Linda or had something to do with Linda.
And I truly believe that Linda brought us together. I do. I think that Linda brought you and I together. I think that, you know, and I think that she is waiting on us to continue the work. I think that she smiles down on the continuation of this journey. And, you know, I wish she were here, but you know, it's up to the rest of us to carry on. And with that said, I also want to talk about another aspect of your life that is so interesting and so fun, and it has resulted in an extremely cool book that you were working on. And the book is about Elvis Presley and King Tut. Right. Talk to us about this book.
Okay, it's called The Kings of Memphis, and it's coming out probably in the first part of April, maybe the middle. And I talked to Graceland about it, and so far they haven't seen the completed project, but so far they are very receptive, and as a matter of fact, there's a couple of Egyptologists and archaeologists within the Elvis Presley organization, and that was the Akron, which is fascinating at another level again. But anyway, to make a long story short, I knew Elvis and used to spend time with him with a group of girls who were like little kid girls. You know, we were young teenagers, and we weren't the girls he was sleeping with. We were just his fans, and he loved us, and we loved him, and we could kind of knock on the door and say, can I come in now? And if he, you know, was, if he'd had dinner and didn't have a date or whatever, sure, come on in, and we'd hang out together. So I did get to know him, and I talked to him about some esoteric things, but I know that he did believe in reincarnation, and he wondered almost incessantly about why he was born with so much. His twin had died. His family was poor. I mean, his twin was buried in a shoebox, and yet he achieved so much. And so it was a puzzle. And right after he died, within a few days, I had this dream, and I saw him in some kind of blue, let's say, draping, kind of floating out what would be vibrations. And at that time, he understood, and I understood in the dream, that he had been reincarnated from King Tut. So it sounds kind of just fun and campy, and it is in some ways, but the truth of it is, if you look at the parallels in their lives, it's astonishing. You know, they're both Kings of Memphis, which is the title.
I love that.
Isn't that great? And right down to the end, I mean, both of their graves were robbed. They both did play the guitar. They had similar situations, like they each only had this one queen, and they had so much fame at a young age that it was difficult for them to cope with it. They had people around them. They both had the same numbers in their entourage. They both had a colonel, so to speak, and people trying to manipulate them for money. And there's just a thousand parallels, and the one of them is that Priscilla looks a lot like Ed Cinnamon, you know, his little girl, 14-year-old girl bride. And as you know, Elvis hooked up with Priscilla when she was 14.
She was 14.
So many parallels that the book is fascinating because of that. And so the only, I can't say too much about, I don't want to, you know, I'm not licensed yet to talk about anything from Graceland, but I will say it may be from there. I got some comments about, gosh, this is really astonishing, that the research and the parallels. I mean, it is amazing. It's there, folks, and it could have been.
And I have been privileged enough to read some passages from it, and it's fantastic. It's fun. It's cool. The writing's great. And the parallels are amazing. So I can't wait for it to come out, and we will also keep people posted on that. And that will be available on your via your website, which is planetredhead.net, correct?
Right.
We don't want to send people to planetredhead.com, not .com.
That's for dating, finding your redhead to date, and we didn't do it, you know, we just didn't do it. We likely would have at another time in our life, but we didn't do it.
So it's planetredhead.net, that's Carolyn's website, and there'll be more information about the book on
planetredhead.net. Yes, as we do, different things. But that's a very exciting project, really, and I hope that people read it, because it does give tremendous insights to what Elvis was thinking at that time. And, you know, he was searching. Everybody has a tendency to think of his rock and roll life, but he was always searching for things to connect him to whatever brought him to this incredible fame and fortune. He wondered why was he picked, and there was a reason.
Was his twin...
That's for all of us.
Well, of course.
He was a twin.
Was his twin stillborn, or was he... Did the twin live into infancy at all?
No, he was stillborn, and he was born like 25 or 30 minutes ahead of Elvis. And in that 25 or 30 minutes, there was a malefic star, again, back to the fixed star. And when you're born into that star, it's real hard to survive. So it showed that the birth was, you know, it had no substance, unfortunately. Although I couldn't imagine a world with two of them in there. Two Elvises. Jeez. It would be so exciting, even more.
Well, I mean, he definitely defined and continues to define an era. And this is something which I want to kind of like move into as we're nearing the end of our interview, which is the fact that specifically in the 1960s, there was this talk about the Age of Aquarius, which in recent years has been substituted by we are entering the fifth world of the Mayans, this 2012
right.
phenomenon. So far, we have been talking about astrology on a purely individual basis. Is there also kind of trends, or do we need to also take into account the age or the phases of whether it's our Earth or the solar system? Or how do you see this Age of Aquarius? Because obviously the term itself defines an astrological connection.
Right. You know... There is a puzzle there, but it does lead back to, of course, the Mayans. And the Mayans, like the Egyptians, were such, I think, an evolved society. And a lot of people say, well, if they were, how come they disappeared? Well, maybe they disappeared because they were evolved enough to know to get away at that time, and they went to another location or something. But I do think that there is a definite change as a result of that time. And... I'm not sure that it doesn't involve some sort of connection to another form of life or a gateway to a parallel universe or a return of, and this is what I think, it signals a time of a return of very advanced people for our civilization to help us through. And I think... I'm sorry to keep saying it about the Egyptians, but to me they were very advanced, just the pyramids alone, and so many other things. You know, when I did the book on Elvis, there are so many ways that they hid their knowledge. We don't have a clue to what they really knew, I think. And I think that the clue will come in 2012 as some of the people who were involved in that civilization come back to this civilization in time now.
Well, that is actually very interesting because the only archaeological evidence about the 2012 phenomenon, if you want, or mystery, which has been unearthed, does actually say, and it's an inscription in Tortuguero, a Mayan site, that in 2012 the nine gods of the underworld will come back. So, how have you arrived at this conclusion? Is this intuitive or is this based on astrology?
No. Thank you for asking. That is a remarkable question because it isn't intuitive. I moved to Arizona, and I was working on different projects. And one of the things is that if you live in Sedona, there's the story that there's people who live underground, and they're part of technological research that we don't know about, and black budgets that we don't know about, and so forth. So I started with that, and it wound its way through the Vatican. And Katie, I mentioned this to you the other day when we were talking about another project. But there are like 13 tribes of Indians from Arizona to New Mexico, and they all have the same myth that there were in different voices, so to speak, that there were people who lived underground or Indians who knew of passageways, much like infringed, from one universe to the other, like a parallel universe or an alternate of this universe that we have. And there, every so many thousands of years, they connect with us to bring us the knowledge that we need. And I just thought, you know, these myths, they're not there by accident. Something made them believe that the Indians could access or knew the points of that access to these new gateways of universes or civilizations or knowledge of people that were just so much brighter than what we are here and now. So that's an excellent question. That's how I got to it. It wasn't intuition at all. It was following the trails of the Vatican's interest here with the observatory, and why are they looking for aliens? And then, you know, the Indians and the myths and the vortexes, and why, you know, did we have the atomic bomb site there? It's just fascinating. And it all kind of goes back to that original theory that this is cyclic. Every so many thousands of years, we have something happen. And it could be that we connect to a higher knowledge.
Well, I certainly believe that, and I'm excited about it, actually, and I think we should all be excited about it. We only have about two more minutes, but I wanted to ask you really quick. You had talked to me off the air, and I want you to mention it on the air, about a book that came out in 1997 that predicted a lot of things astrologically that are happening in the world today. And I wanted you to talk about that before we sign off, because I think it's a really important piece of information for people who want to do some more research on their own.
Or people who want to follow current events. And it, again, it's cyclic. It talks about what happened 100 years ago and how if the return of a certain planet in a certain position, how it affects us now. It's called Horoscope for the New Millennium. It's by E. Allen Meese, and it's published by Llewellyn Publications. And it is so fascinating. The first thing that caught my eye, and I read this in about 2000, was about piracy. And I was thinking, you know, what, 1700s maybe, but not today. Well, look how wrong I was there. And so when that happened, I really got into this book. And he talks about the revolt by the average man in the streets. It's if he had written a headline from a newspaper yesterday. So he's just fascinating. And it's with most astrologers, like Rudyard, you know, he was a classical musician, a philosopher, a scientist. This man is very well degreed and has a lot of credentialing that a lot of the scientists would be impressed with. And then on top of that, he's a fabulous astrologer. And I just thought, during these times, if you want to see what's going on in the world and you wonder about so many things, like even 2012, take a look at his book. It's fascinating.
And that's Meese, M-E-E-C-E is the name of that astrologer. But the astrologer we're talking to right now is my dear friend and teacher, Carolyn Reynolds. Thank you so much for being with us today. We have many, many more things to talk about coming forward. Carolyn and I are working on a book together called Star Men, which is about understanding men through astrology. So hopefully we'll be able to make some pretty exciting announcements about that in the near future. We have a couple of other secret astrology projects under our belt right now, don't we?
Yes, we do.
But in the meantime,
everybody, if you're interested, they need to get on your Facebook and start hooking up and keeping abreast of what we're doing, because it's very exciting.
Absolutely. Make sure you get on our mailing lists or on our on my Facebook. Also, you can go to Carolyn's website, planetredhead.net, to see this great book she's got coming out about Elvis and King Tut. It's really fun. You guys are really going to love it. Until next week, Carolyn, thank you again so much for joining us. We will have more discussions in the future about the power and the nature of astrology.
And thank you, and thanks, Philip, too.
Till next week, the truth against the world. We'll